That's still disgusting.
Reacher said, Axis, Bold as Love, that was the second album.
What was the sixth track?
Dixon asked. I have no idea.
O'Donnell said, When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping.
They walked a long way east on Sunset until they found a record store. They went inside and found cool air and young people and loud music and the H section in the rock-pop aisles. There was a dense foot and a half of Jimi Hendrix albums, four old titles that Reacher recognized, plus a bunch of posthumous stuff. Axis, Bold as Love was right there, three copies. Reacher pulled one and flipped it. It was wrapped in plastic, and the store's barcode label was stuck over the second half of the track listings. Same for the second copy, same for the third.
Rip it off,
O'Donnell said. Steal it?
No, rip the plastic off.
Can't do that. It's not ours.
You smack cops around, but you won't damage a store's wrapper?
It's different.
So what are you going to do?
I'm going to buy it. We can play it in the car. Cars have CD players, right?
For the last 100 years,
Dixon said. Reacher took the CD and lined up behind a girl with more metal punched through her face than a grenade victim. He made it to the register and peeled off 13 of his remaining $800, and for the first time in his life became the owner of a digital product.
Unwrap it, O'Donnell said.
It was wrapped tight. Reacher used his fingernails to scrape up a corner, and then his teeth to tear the plastic. When he got it all off, he turned the CD over and ran his finger down the track list. Little Wing, he said. O'Donnell shrugged. Nagley looked blank.
Doesn't help,
Dixon said. I know the song, Reacher said.
Please don't sing it,
Nagley said.
So, what does it mean?
O'Donnell said. Reacher said, It means New Age makes a weapons system called Little Wing.
Obviously. But that doesn't help us if we don't know what Little Wing is.
Sounds aeronautical, like a drone plane or something.
Nobody heard of it? Dixon asked. Anybody?
O'Donnell shook his head.
Not me,
Nagley said.
So it really is super secret, Dixon said. No loose lips in D.C. or on Wall Street, or among all of Nagley's connections?
Reacher tried to open the CD box, but found it taped shut with a title label that ran all the way across the top seam. He picked at it with his nails, and it came off in small, sticky fragments. No wonder the record business is in trouble, he said. They don't make these things very easy to enjoy. Dixon asked,
What are we going to do?
What did the email say?
You know what it said.
But do you?
What do you mean?
What did it say?
Find the sixth track on the second Hendrix album.
And?
And nothing.
No. It said, Please call soonest.
That's ridiculous,
Nagley said.
If he won't tell me by email, why would he tell me on the phone?
It didn't say, Please call me. A coded note like that, every word counts.
So who am I supposed to call?
There must be somebody. He knows you know somebody that can help.
Who's going to help with a thing like this, if he won't?
Who does he know you know? Maybe from Washington, since he used that word, and every word counts. Nagley opened her mouth to say, Nobody. Reacher saw the denial forming in her throat, but then she paused.
There's a woman. She's called Diana Bond. We both know her. She's a staffer for a guy on the Hill. The guy is on the House Defense Committee.
There you go. Who's the guy?
Nagley said a familiar but unloved name.
You've got a friend who works for that asshole?
Not exactly a friend.
I should hope not.
Everyone needs a job, Reacher.
Except you, apparently. Whatever, her boss is signing the check, so he'll have been briefed. He'll know what Little Wing is, therefore she will, too.
Not if it's secret.
That guy can't spell his own name without help. Believe me, if he knows, she knows too.
She's not going to tell me.
She is, because you're going to play hardball. You're going to call her and tell her that Little Wing's name is out there, and you're about to tell the papers that the leak came from her boss's office, and the price for your silence is everything she knows about it.
That's dirty.
That's politics. She can't be exactly unfamiliar with the process, working for that guy.
Do we really need to do this? Is it relevant?
The more we know, the luckier we get.
I don't want to involve her.
Your Pentagon buddy wants you to,
O'Donnell said. That's just Reacher's guess.
No, it's more than that. Think about the email. He said the sixth track was dynamically brilliant. That's a weird phrase. He could have just said it was great, or amazing, or brilliant on its own, but he said dynamically brilliant.
Which is the letters D and B, like this Diana Bond woman's initials.
Chapter 38. Nagley insisted on making the call to Diana Bond alone. When they got back to the hotel, she parked herself in a far corner of the lobby and did a whole lot of dialing and redialing, then some serious talking. She came back a long 20 minutes later, slight distaste on her face, slight discomfort in her body language, but a measure of excitement, too.
Took me some time to track her down. Turns out she's not far away. She's up at Edwards Air Force Base for a few days, some big presentation.
O'Donnell said, "That's why your guy said call her soonest. He knew she was in California.
Every word counts."
"What did she say?" Reacher asked.
"She's coming down here," Nagley said. "She wants to meet face to face."
"Really?" Reacher said. "When?"
"Just as soon as she can get away."
"That's impressive."
"You bet your ass it is. Little Wing must be important."
"Feel bad about the call?" Nagley nodded.
"I feel bad about everything."
They went up to Nagley's room and looked at maps and figured out Diana Bond's earliest possible arrival time. Edwards was on the other side of the San Gabriel Mountains, out in the Mojave, about 70 miles north and east, past Palmdale and Lancaster, about halfway to Fort Irwin. A 2-hour wait, minimum, if Bond got away immediately. Longer if she didn't.
"I'm going for a walk," Reacher said.
O'Donnell said,
"I'll come with you."
They headed east on Sunset again to where West Hollywood met regular Hollywood. It was early afternoon, and Reacher felt the sun burning his head through his shaved hair. It was like the rays had extra intensity after bouncing around through glittering particles of air pollution.
"I should buy a hat," he said.
"You should buy a better shirt," O'Donnell said. "You can't afford one now."
"Maybe I will."
They saw a store they had passed on the way to Tower Records. It was some kind of a popular chain. It had an artfully pale and uncrowded window, but it wasn't expensive. It sold cotton stuff, jeans, chinos, shirts and T-shirts, and ball caps. They were brand new, but looked like they had been worn and washed 1,000 times already. Reacher picked one out, blue, no writing on it. He never bought anything with writing on it. He had spent too long in uniform. Name tapes and badges and alphabet soup all over him for 13 long years. He loosened the strap at the back of the cap and tried it on.
"What do you think?" he asked.
O'Donnell said,
"Find the mirror."
"Doesn't matter what I see in the mirror. You're the one laughing at how I look."
"It's a nice hat."
Reacher kept it on and moved across the store to a low table piled high with T-shirts. In the center of the table was a mannequin torso wearing two of them, one under the other, pale green and dark green. The underneath shirt showed at the hem and the sleeves and the collar. Together, the two layers were reassuringly thick and hefty. Reacher asked,
"What do you think?"
"It's a look," O'Donnell said.
Do they need to be different sizes?
Probably not.
Reacher picked a light blue and a dark blue, both extra, extra larges. He took off the hat and carried the three items to the register, refused a bag, and bit off the tags and stripped off his bowling shirt right there in the middle of the store, stood and waited, naked to the waist in the chill of the air conditioning.
Got a trash can? He asked.
The girl behind the counter bent down and came back with a plastic item with a liner. Reacher tossed his old shirt in and put his new shirts on, one after the other, tugged them around and rolled his shoulders to get them comfortable, and jammed the cap on his head. Then he headed back to the street, turned east. O'Donnell asked,
"What are you running from?"
"I'm not running from anything."
"You could have kept the old shirt."
"Slippery slope," Reacher said. "I carry a spare shirt. Pretty soon I'm carrying spare pants. Then I'd need a suitcase. Next thing I know, I've got a house and a car and a savings plan, and I'm filling out all kinds of forms."
"People do that."
"Not me."
"So like I said, what are you running from?"
"From being like people, I guess."
"I'm like people. I've got a house and a car and a savings plan. I fill out forms."
"Whatever works for you."
"Do you think I'm ordinary?"
Reacher nodded. "In that respect."
"Not everyone can be like you."
"That's ass backward. The fact is, a few of us can't be like you."
"You want to be?"
"It's not about wanting, it just can't be done."
"Why not?"
"Okay, I'm running."
"Ah, from what?"
"Being like me."
"From being different than I used to be."
"We're all different than we used to be."
"We don't all have to like it."
"I don't like it," O'Donnell said. "But I deal with it."
Reacher nodded. "You're doing great, Dave. I mean it. It's me that I worry about. I've been looking at you and Nagley and Carla and feeling like a loser."
"Really?
Look at me.
All that we've got that you don't is suitcases."
"But what have I got that you don't?"
O'Donnell didn't answer. They turned north on Vine, middle of the afternoon in America's second largest city, and saw two guys with pistols in their hands jumping out of a moving car. Chapter 39. The car was a black Lexus sedan, brand new. It sped up and took off again immediately, leaving the two guys alone on the sidewalk, maybe 30 yards ahead. They were the bag man and the stash man from the vacant lot behind the wax museum. The pistols were AMT hardballers, which were stainless steel copies of Colt, government 1911 45 automatics. The hands holding them were shaking a little, and moving up level, and rotating through 90 degrees into flat, movie-approved bad boy grips. O'Donnell's own hands went straight to his pockets.
"They want us," he said.
"They want me," Reacher said.
He glanced back at what was behind him. He wasn't very worried about being hit by a badly held 45 from 30 yards away. He was a big target, but statistics were on his side. Handguns were in-room weapons. Under expert control in high-pressure situations, the average range for a successful engagement was about 11 feet. But even if Reacher himself wasn't hit, someone else might be, or something else. A person a block away, or a low-flying plane, maybe. Collateral damage. The street was thick with potential targets. Men, women, children, plus other folks Reacher wasn't entirely sure how to categorize. He turned to face front again. The two guys hadn't moved far, not more than a couple of steps. O'Donnell's eyes were locked hard on them.
"We should take this out the street, Dave," Reacher said.
O'Donnell said,
"Roger that."
"Moving left," Reacher said. He crabbed sideways and risked a glance to his left. The nearest door was a narrow tarot reader's dive. His mind was working with a kind of icy, high-pressure speed. He was moving normally, but the world around him had slowed. The sidewalk had become a four-dimensional diagram, forward, backward, sideways, time.